Okay. So we're on Daf off on the base. Okay. And we're up to Omar of Huna, which you'll see that the Daf has different size lines, so it's the real wide lines on the bottom, so to speak. And it's line 4. Okay then? So this is the sugya of Hamispalel Achorei Beis HaKnesses, which literally translates that he's davening behind the Beis HaKnesses. We have to figure out exactly what the logistics are. In any event, let me make just one comment as we start. This statement of the Gemara belongs here in this place for two reasons. First of all, because earlier in this daf, a few lines earlier, the Gemara quoted another statement of Rav Huna, and as you know, it's very common to quote the same Amora more than once. But I think more importantly is that the previous statement in the name of Rav Huna was also about a Beis HaKnesses. That's what we discussed 2 days ago. A person who leaves the Beis HaKnesses, he starts running away and he looks like he's trying to get out of there. It's too hot, it's too pressured. Now we have a different statement of Rav Huna, but also about the Beis HaKnesses. Kol HaMispalel Achorei Beis HaKnesses Nikra Rasha. And the basic question we're going to have to address here is, why is Rav Huna so harsh against someone who davens, whatever it means, Achorei Beis HaKnesses? We'll have to see what that means. Shenemar, and Rav Huna darshens a pasuk in Tehillim, Saviv Rishoyim Yisalochun. Now, if you'll take a look in the Torah R, I don't know if you have the same printing that I do, but in number Zion, it says, Soviv Rishom Yisalochun, Kirum Zulos Zulus Livnei Adam. So our Gemara now is darshaning the first half of this Pasuk, the first three words in the Pasuk, and later on the Gemara is going to try to interpret the last four words in the same Pasuk. So I'm just giving you a heads up. So basically, let's just interpret the words of the Gemara very simply, because again, it gets a little bit more complicated as we go through Rashi and Tosas. So we're going to do it without Rashi, because again, there's going to be a whole debate about what the words of Rashi mean, and that's the top left column of the page. That's going to be Rashi. So before we read Rashi, just in a very general sense, without getting into the nitty-gritty details of what this means, we're talking about someone who, instead of going into the Beis HaKnesses, he stands outside the Beis HaKnesses. And that itself, the fact that he doesn't want to enter in together with the Tzibur, that's considered kfirah of some sort. And, you know, again, just by sheer association, I'm reminded of the Haggadah Shel Pesach. You know, the Rasha comes along and he says, Ma avodah zos lachem. You know, Hotzi Asatzmo min haklal, and Chazal are very harsh on someone who removes himself from the tzibur, from the klal. But again, that's just on a very superficial level. Now, in order to understand the pasuk, we're going to have to assume that the word saviv, which means around, is indicative of someone who's walking around without entering in. You know, it's like there's a circle, and he goes around the circle, but he refuses to enter into the circle. It doesn't mean that their synagogues were shaped like a circle. I'm not saying that. Their synagogues were like a rectangle. And you came in, as we'll see in Rashi, from the east, and you faced the west. And the reason for that is, back in the day, they were in Bavel, and Bavel is to the east of Eretz Yisrael, of Yerushalayim, and therefore they faced west. We are usually in the west, and therefore of Eretz Yisrael, therefore we face the east. But in the time of the Gemara, they davened not towards Mizrach, but towards the Marav, if they were in Bavel. And this person is walking around the Beis HaKnesses, so to speak. He's circulating the Beis HaKnesses, but he refuses to go inside the Beis HaKnesses. And that's called a Rasha. And we're going to see soon an amazing story in the Gemara that seems to indicate that he's such a Rasha that he's Chayav Misa. Okay, again, you know, we have to take this slowly but surely and build ourselves up here. It's very difficult to understand why the Gemara is so harsh. Again, he's Parish Minat Tzibur. I wouldn't give him, you know, an applause for this, but to say that therefore he's a Rasha and he's Chayav Misa, that seems to be a little bit what we call it in modern Hebrew, Mugzam. You know what I mean by Mugzam? Eximubo, you know. Yeah, this is an exaggeration. You know, how far can you go? But before we get into, again, the nitty-gritty of Rashi and Tosus, we're going to look at Abaye. Because Abaye makes a very important qualification of the statement of Rav Huna. Omar Abaye. Lo Amaron, when is he considered a Rasha? Because he's a Mispalachore, Beis HaKnesses, Ella, that's only in a case of Delo Mahader Ape Lebe Knishta. Those two words, Mahader Ape, means to face in a certain direction. So he's not facing the direction of the Beis HaKnesses. His face is not towards the Beis HaKnesses, but rather his face is away from the Beis HaKnesses.
But it's interesting, he's in proximity. I mean, the guy who's probably Russian, he wouldn't want to come near the shul. I mean,
right. But he deliberately doesn't go into the shul, according to most Rishonim. There is one possibility that he does go into the shul, but he stays behind. But I don't want to confuse us because that's already more confusing, more advanced. But suffice it to say that he refuses, according to the Mefarshim, to go into the Beis HaKnesses. Rav Kook is going to have a whole presentation here on this individual who refuses to go into the Beis HaKnesses. Why is he refusing to go into the Beis HaKnesses? But what Abai is pointing out is that not only does he refuse to go into the Beis HaKnesses, he refuses to face towards the Beis HaKnesses. But then Abai says we can drop down to another case which is not as severe and might even be acceptable. I don't know. We'll have to see. Aval mahader ape lebei knishta, even if he doesn't go into the Beis HaKnesses, but at the very least, he is facing the Beis HaKnesses, which means that he's outside the Beis HaKnesses, but he's facing the west. Again, keep in mind, Rabbi Osai, that at those times they faced the west. So he's outside the Beis HaKnesses, but he's facing the same direction that the Tzibur is facing. So on the one hand, he's outside the Tzibur, but on the other hand, at least he has the respect for the Tzibur, and he's facing the same direction that the Tzibur is facing. And in such a case as Abaye, don't be harsh on this individual. Les lan ba. We do not object to what he's doing. So let's, Rav Osai, now begin the sugya. And we'll start with Rashi. Rashi, on the top line, on the left column, because, you know, if there's no Tosus on the page, then Rashi spills over from the right to the left. Kol Pischei Batei Knesios, when they entered into the Beis HaKnesses, that entry was through the east. So the eastern side of the Beis HaKnesses was where the gateway, the entrance was. And they walked into the Beis HaKnesses facing west. V'hachi Tanya v'tosefta de Megillah, me'ein Migdash u'mishkan. That our Beis HaKnesses was structured in a way that resembles that of the Migdash and the Mishkan, which means Pneiem Lamarov. They walked in through the Mizrach and they faced the Marov, the Achareim leMizrach, so their back was to the door. The Hamispalel Achorei Beis HaKnesses. This individual refuses to enter into the Beis HaKnesses, so he's located on the eastern side relative to the Tzibur. The Eino Machzer Ponov leBeis HaKnesses. Now that's going to be the ambiguous part of Rashi. I'm going to assume the following, that he turns his back to the Mizrach, correct? And therefore he's looking at the Mizrach, if you follow me. So if I stand at the entrance into the Beis HaKnesses, which is on the Tzad Mizrach, and the people enter in and face Mara, because that's the direction of Yerushalayim, this person doesn't enter into the Beis HaMidrash, or Beis HaKnesses, excuse me, and instead of facing at least the same direction, which would be to the Marav, he turns his back to the Beis HaKnesses, and he's facing the Mizrach. In other words, he's doing a double avera, so to speak. It's tarte l'reiv, so that to use the Gemara's phrase in other places. He's not only outside the Beis HaMedrash, Beis HaKnesses, but he's also turning his back to the Beis HaKnesses, and he's not even looking in the same direction, not facing the same direction as the Tzibur. Says Rashi, why are we so harsh with him? Not the way we said it, because he removes himself from the tzibur, but Rashi says nireb kekofer b'mishat tzibur mispalov. It's not that he's being kofer. It's not that he's being pogea in the tzibur so much. He's being pogea in him with a capital H, to whom the tzibur is praying. The tzibur is praying towards the marav. He refuses to pray towards the marav. It's as if he's making some sort of statement that God doesn't exist. You know, I'm not going to pray towards God. And that makes him into a kofer, which Rashi is trying to make an effort at explaining why Rav Huda is so harsh on such an individual. The Hadar of Huda Muki Leilabai Bidalo Mahadar Ape Lebek Nishta. He's not facing the Beis HaKnesses. Had he been facing the Beis HaKnesses, he would be looking towards the west, because he's coming from the east. And then he would be mispaul and mishat tzibur mispaulav. But by turning his back to the Beis HaKnesses, and instead of facing the west, he's facing the east, he's nirek kofer b'mi shat tzibur mispaulim lefanov. Now let's look at Tosfos. And the basic question that I want to ask you as we go through this Tosfos is whether or not Tosfos has the same Rashi that we have. Yes, the Tosfos part is printed on Daf Vavam and Aleph. Now, I want to just fast forward a little bit, just to see how Tosfos interprets this sugya. And for that, I want you to look at the word nira, which, again, if you count up from the bottom of the Tosfos, just that we're all on the same page here, is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom. Alkein nira. Again, this is after Tosfos pounces and tears Rashi to shreds. Again, we'll have to see if it's the same Rashi that we have. And Tosfos says, what I think is pshat is achorei Beis HaKnesses, mishu achorei ha'am b'mizrach, v'ha'am mishtachvim l'marav. So Rabbo say, I would submit to you, again, according to the best of my understanding, that Tosfos is explaining the Gemara exactly the way we understood Rashi. Namely, that he is outside the Beis HaKnesses, the people enter into the Mizrach, and they pray, or they bow in this case, towards the Marav, towards the west, and he turns his face away from the Beis HaKnesses, and he's facing the east. But he apparently didn't see that in Rashi. Pirish Rashi, now we go back to the beginning of Tosfos, says, Kol pischei bate knesios haye b'mizrach, v'achoreihem l'mayrov. So it's very interesting. The back of the shul is on the west. V'zeh mispalel achorei beis haknesses. V'eino mechazir ponov l'beis haknesses. Now, we don't have these words in our Rashi. And the commentaries point out that there is another version of Rashi which is printed in the Ein Yaakov. And it's also printed in Rashi on the Rif. You know, if you open up the Rif, you'll see Rashi. Usually that Rashi is a sort of synopsis, a tamtzit of our Rashi. But occasionally, it's a different Rashi. And Rashi says that he is on, if let's say, Rabbi Osai, you have to look at me for a second because I don't have a little, dugma, I wish I had a little. But if you imagine this, if this is your shul, and you enter into the Mizrach, according to Tosus's version of Rashi, this person, we'll call this the Kotel Amaravi, right? Because this is the western wall, right? The Aron Kodesh is here, and this is the wall. This individual is outside the western wall, correct? And he decides to face the same direction that the tzibur is facing, right? Because his back now is to the western wall. And Rashi says, because he's turning his back to the synagogue, again, this is not our Rashi, but this is the Rashi of Tosfos. He's turning his back to the Beis HaKnesses, meaning to the Aron Kodesh, if you will, to the Kotel HaMaravi. That itself makes him into a kofer. Tos says he doesn't understand. V'lo nehira, he says, the adarava. On the contrary, he's doing what a person should be doing. By turning his back to the Beis HaKnesses, he is not creating a new, he's not creating what we call a new reshus. We'll try to explain that in a minute. But on the contrary, he is trying to daven in the same direction that the tzibur is davening. Do you follow what I'm saying? Because again, if he's outside the Beis HaKnesses, and the tzibur inside the Beis HaKnesses is facing the Marav, he too wants to face the Marav. He's really in a bind. Because no matter how you slice the cake, he's sort of in trouble. He has two options. He could face the Aron Kodesh, right, the western wall, meaning facing east, but then he's facing the opposite direction of the tzibur. The tzibur is facing west and he's facing east. Or he could turn his back to the Beis HaKnesses, to the Aron Kodesh, and face west, which on the one hand is sort of insulting to the Beis HaKnesses, but on the other hand, he's trying to match up with the tzibur, and just like the tzibur is facing west, he also wants to face west. So Tosus objects to Rashi. Tosus draws the conclusion that in such a bind, and he has to choose between two, shall we say, b'dievids, none of the options that he has are very attractive. He, if he's choosing the option that Rashi claims he's choosing, namely by turning his back to the Beis HaKnesses, he's doing the right thing. He's choosing the lesser of two evils by facing in the same direction as the tzibur. And therefore he's not a kofer. So Tosfos says, rather we should assume that he's on the outside of the Beis HaKnesses, near the entrance on the Tzad HaMizrach. Everyone is turning towards the Marav and praying towards the west. He turns his back to the Beis HaKnesses, and therefore he's facing the opposite direction as the Tzibur. And then Tosfos goes on to say that this whole structure, in terms of west and east, is only a reflection of that time when they were located on the eastern side of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they faced the west. Dafkim, Shahayim in Hagam l'spal l'marav. So their minhag was to face the west, which means to face Yerushalayim. Aval anu, but we live in the western part of the world, and therefore we face the Mizrach. Sha'anu b'maravo shel Eretz Yisrael. So we're on the west of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore we should always daven towards Eretz Yisrael, which is based on a pasuk in Tanakh. Okay, Rabbi Osai, so I'm going to now just summarize what we did by reading to you a piece here in this note. And if you, maybe we could photocopy it, but it's note number Tesvav. Let me see if I got this right. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's note number Lamed Vav. Okay. He says the following. Yesh lefaresh be The Adam Sha'omed Achore Kir HaMizrachi Shal Beis HaKnesses. This is certainly Tosus's pshat. We believe it's also Rashi's pshat. The way we have the version of Rashi, he's outside the eastern wall, which is the entryway to the Beis HaKnesses. Shebo, on that wall, the eastern wall, Kvuim HaPsachim, that's where the entranceways always were. She'im mispalel litzad mizrach, if now he davens towards the east, lehepech menat tzibur, he's davening in the opposite direction of the tzibur, nikra rasha. Ve'im mispalel, but if he faces the west, kamo kulam litzad amarav, enu nikra rasha. And that's the way he interprets the Gemara, which I think is not only Tosus but also Rashi. However, Pirush Nosaf B'Sugyazu Heviu Tosus B'Shem Rashi. Tosus brings a different shot in the Sugya, the name of Rashi. I think he's implying that that's not Rashi. And he writes in brackets, V'cheinu B'Rashi Al HaRif. And if you take a look at Rashi's commentary on the Rif, that's where you'll find Tosus' shot. And the Achorei Beis HaKnesses here means he was on the western side, not in the entrance way, but on the other side of the Aron Kodesh. We called it the Kosel HaMaravi. Adam ze omed michutz lekir hamaravi shel Beis HaKnesses. Dahainu me'achorei Aron HaKodesh. The Aron Kodesh was in the west. He's on the other side of the wall where the Aron Kodesh is connected to. V'im omedu mispalel litzad mairov. If he would daven towards the western side, meaning towards the Aron Kodesh, towards the west, meaning in the same direction as the Tzibur, Nimtza Shachorav Litzad Beis HaKnesses. And Rashi claims, Be'ofen Kazeu Nira Kekofer, B'bisha Tzibur Mispal, because he's facing the west, that means he's turning his back to the Aron Kodesh. Aval im machzir ponov litzad Aron Kodesh. If instead of turning his back to the Aron Kodesh, he would look towards the Aron Kodesh, meaning he would face the east, eino nikra rasha. V'tomu atosus al pirush then. Tosus says, I don't understand it. Shari mistaber lomal lehepach. Just the reverse is true. She'imu mispalel litzad mairov. Even though he's turning his back to the Aron Kodesh, but nevertheless he's facing towards the west. Hainu litzad shekol atzibur mispalel olav. In those days, everybody faced the west. He's facing the west. Einu nikra rasha. On the contrary, in machzir ponov litzad mizrach, if he would turn around to face the Aron Kodesh, face the east, because again he's on the western side. Nimtza shekol atzibur mispalel mairav, who mispalel mizrach, ubiofen azeh. That's when he's nikra rasha. So, if it's Hashem, I think we did a good job. Okay, then quick review again, just for myself. A quick review: Rashi and Tosus, meaning Rashi the way we have Rashi, and Tosus the way he says at the end, Venira, are talking about an individual who's outside the Beis HaKnesses on the eastern side. He hasn't entered into the Beis Medrash. She has two options. He can either face the same direction as the Tzibur, or he can turn his back to the Beis HaKnesses and face the east. If he turns his back towards the Beis HaKnesses and faces the east, so as we said, it's a tarti l'reisa. On the one hand, he's not entering into the Beis HaKnesses. He's not facing the direction that Tzibur is facing. He's turning his back to the Beis HaKnesses. He's done all the averis that you want. And he's a nikra rasha. That's Rashi the way we have it, Lufi Ani Yazdaiti, and I think that's the way he understood it. And that's Tosus Lamaskana. There was a Rashi that interpreted that this man is outside the western wall of the Beis HaKnesses, and he has two options. The Tzibur is facing west. He can face the same direction west, but in so doing he turns his back to the Aron Kodesh, or he could have his front, his face facing the Aron Kodesh, but in that sense, in that context, he is davening towards the east while the Tzibur is davening facing the west. Rashi says that what he did was he turned his back to the Beis HaKnesses. He's Nikra Rasha. And Tosfos says on the contrary, in this situation he has to turn his back to the Beis HaKnesses in order to face west, because he should always be facing the same direction as the Tzion. That's more or less the summary of what I call the logistics of this sugya. And now we have to understand what was so severe about this person's aver. And we're going to see Rav Kook on this, but before we see Rav Kook, I just feel that it's necessary to learn the next piece of Gemara. Hahu Gavra, this is a strange story. You know, there's some stories in the Gemara that I understand and I'm happy with them, but this one, I can't say I'm a happy camper. There was an individual, Dekomitzali Achore Beiknishta, V'lomahader Ape LeBeiknishta. He did all the wrong things. So he was outside the Beis HaKnesses, and he wasn't facing the Beis HaKnesses, and the way Rashi and Tosfos interpret it is he was facing the opposite direction of the Tzibur. He was facing east. Chalaf. Okay, now here there's a Girsa problem. But let's read the Girsa that we have in our Sfarim, and then we'll see the Rif's Girsa. Chalaf. Chalaf means pass by. Elio. No, nobody greater than Elio Hanov. Chazye, he saw what this guy was doing. Okay, now the real problem starts with the next three words. Idamile kitayo'a. Yeah. Rashi says, Tayo'a, socher aravi. And it seems, again, according to our Girsa, the Marsha is going to just completely smash what I'm about to tell you, so keep in mind that what I'm telling you is Beiravon Mugbal, that Elio Navi thought that the person he was looking at was an Arab businessman. Amar Le, and these next words are the most important words in the sugya for our purposes, because we're trying to figure out, why does a person who turns his back to the Beis HaKnesses and faces Mizrach when the Tzibur is facing Marv, why is he worthy of such a severe punishment? Why is he called a Rasha? So Elio is going to spill the beans. Kidu bar kaimis kami morach. Rashi explains, Kidu bar. Kidu means shtey. Bar means rishus, a domain. Two domains, and you read it with a question mark. Are there two domains, kaimis, in front of morach, your master, meaning the master of the universe? What does it mean, two rishuyos? In those days, and we've mentioned it in the past, there was a belief called Gnosticism, where they believed that there are two gods. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik used to tell us that the purpose and the motif of the first, of the second bracha of Kriyat Shema, of Birchas, bracha Shnia, I'm sorry, of the bracha Rishon Lifnei Kriyat Shema, is Lafuke, is to exclude this belief, because they couldn't understand that there's one God of light, that the same God is the God of light, is the God of darkness, light representing pleasure or fortune, good fortune, whereas darkness represents suffering and evil. You know, there's got to be one God of good and one God of evil. They couldn't accept that there was one God. And this was a very prevalent belief in those days, even more prevalent than idol worship. And Chazal went out of their way over and over again in many different ways, Lafuki, to exclude them. And here's one way of doing it. Because if you're facing a different direction than the Tzibur, you're like saying that there's another God, so to speak. And then you've been sucked into the worst kfira of that period of time. Because again, idol worship was already sort of on its way down. But this belief was apparently sweeping the we say Yotzer Ora Baruch Hoshech, right? This is, everything is God. There's one God. That's Yichud Hashem. And it's not enough that Elio Anovi says that you are indicating that there are two Rishuyos, but more than that, Sholaf Savsara Vikatle. He grabbed a sword and he killed him. So let me explain to you the Marsha. The Marsha says that the Rif was intolerable, found this text of Gemara intolerable. And therefore, the Rif presents a different girsa. He says that it doesn't make sense that because a person davened to the wrong side, to the wrong direction, therefore he's chayev misa. So instead, the Rif takes out the words chalaf Elio. Elio was not here, because Elio would imply that he was sent as a shliach, as a malach from Hashem to kill this guy. But rather, it's chalaf hahu taya, which means that there was a Jew who was davening outside the Beis HaKnesset in the opposite direction of the Tzibur, and a taya passed by. Now, I'm not sure, according to the Girsas HaRif, who killed who. It would seem to me that according to the Girsas HaRif, it was the Arab that killed the Jew. That's not the first time in history that happened. But at least it alleviates one problem. To say that a person who is facing the wrong side of the Beis HaKnesset, therefore he's Chayv Misa, and Eliyahu HaNavi was sent, as we have in our gifts, as a shliach from Hashem, to take this man's life, that's going a bit far. So the Marsha wants to claim that even according to our girsa, we can still salvage something from this sugya. And perhaps we have to reinterpret the words idamile kitaya. We said that idamile kitaya means that Elio Anovi looked like a taya. He's saying no. Elio Anovi looked at the man and he thought that he was an Arab. So he killed him. But he didn't kill a Jew. He killed an Arab. Oh, excellent. So the Rav, what's his name? The Ben Ish Chai, the Ben Yoyod, asks three kashas on the Marsha. But again, let's just summarize the Marsha. So the Marsha is learning, even with our Girsa, it wasn't that Elio killed a Jew, and that's what bothered the Rif over here. Could it be that the din of a Jew who davens against the Iskenes is that we should kill him? No. And therefore the Rif changed the Girsa. Says the Marsha, no, we're not killing a Jew. And we can't kill a Jew for davening in the opposite direction. But we have to reinterpret idamile kitaya means that not that Elio looked like a taya, but rather this person who is davening outside the Beis HaKnesset looked in the eyes of Elio as an Arab. So the Ben Yoyada asks three kashas. Okay, kasha number three. Is an Arab obligated to pray in the same direction as Klal Yisrael? All these dinim that we have to face them. We have to face the east if we're in the west, or we have to face the west if we're in the east. I mean, do those obligations apply to an Arab? Question number two. He says, the language of Elio to this Arab makes no sense. It says, Kaimas Kami Marach, in front of your master. Says the Ben Yoyada, the Arabs at that time, this is before Islam, the Ishmaelim of those times, believed in Avodah Zarah. They didn't even accept the idea of praying to one God. But the third kasha, which is your kasha, Eben, and that's the most, I think, most difficult kasha, how could it be that Elio thought that this person was an Arab and he went ahead and he killed him and accidentally he killed a Jew thinking he was an Arab? How could that be? Elio HaNavi is a malach sent from Shamayim and therefore it's impossible. Says the Ben Yoyada, Elio knew that he was a Jew. You're asking me why was he chayav misa? The answer is that strictly in Beis Din, he's not chayav misa. But we have a klal. What that means, says the Ben Yoyada, is chayav misa bidei shamayim. And sometimes the chachamim institute certain dinim because they touch on the fundamentals of the faith, and they tell you, you should know, if you violate these dinim, we can't put you to death as a capital punishment in Beis Din, but Shamayim will take care of you.
But why is davening in the wrong direction considered fundamental?
So that's what we said, because it's Nirikishtei Rishuyos, meaning the belief at that time was that there's one God and there's another God. And by turning away from God, because this Jew knew that everyone's facing God and he turned to a different God, he was demonstrating he believed that there are two gods. Is lefichach nishlach al yom in hashamayim lahargo kidei lekayim divrei chachamim al divrei chachamim chayv misa b'nei shamayim. So on both sides we have now three approaches to our sugya. One approach is the Marsha's approach, based on our girsa, but he says that Eliyahu made a mistake and he killed a Jew, but he really intended to kill an Arab. Why this Arab should be killed, according to Eliyahu's toes, and how Eliyahu made such toes, the Ben Yodiyoda doesn't understand. And the answer is, says the Ben Yodiyoda, Eliyahu killed him because he was a Jew. And Eliyahu knew he was a Jew. And this is an execution, what's called Misa Bidei Shamayim. He was sent from Shamayim because he believed in two Rishuyos. Now again, you and I might say, maybe he made a mistake. You know, who knows? You know. Again, it's hard to imagine. He came right up to the shul, and instead of going into the shul, he turns his back to the shul and faces the opposite direction. It does look like he was deliberate. He made a demonstration of sorts. But even if you'll argue, who knows? HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. And Eliyahu was sent as a shliach min
HaShamayim. Why does it appear that he believes in two of the shul? He believes in one, and the Jews believe in another. And it's even like today, they might be facing that, and we would be facing that.
Well, again, the fact that he believes in another is indicating that they pray to one God and I pray to a different God. That itself indicates that there are two gods. But in any event, this was a pretty severe avera at that time. You see, it's hard for us to understand this, Gemara, because we live in a different time period. But at that time period, the main opposition against the belief of Judaism was not idol worship. It was Gnosticism, the belief. That's what I told you, that we say the bracha, Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech. The entire purpose of this bracha, we'll see it again in Ma'ariv, is Lafuki, is to exclude that belief that there are two Rishuyos.
Shot, but to whom did the Jew appear to be in Arabic? Eliyahu knew he was a Jew.
Which pshat are you in? Again, let's go through it. The Marsha's pshat is that the Jew appeared to Eliyahu to be an Arab. Eliyahu mistakenly thought he was an Arab and killed him. He would not have killed a Jew, but he would kill an Arab.
But he really knew? But
again, he didn't know. He mistakenly thought he was an Arab. So the Ben Yoyada says, how can Eliyahu make such a mistake? And not only that, why is an Arab obligated to pray in the same direction? So I'm telling you, Rabosai, if you want the Marsha to have Nachas Ruach up in Shamayim, you'd have to spend a lot of time trying to decipher this Marsha. I'm a big Marsha fan, but in this case... I can't tell you I have any pshat. I'm sorry. What? You mean, yeah, okay, Zev is making a good point. He's saying that even if he's an Arab, he has to understand and appreciate that if the Jews are praying in a certain... Again, it wasn't that he was in a different country or so. He was right there, and he saw that the Jews were facing a certain one direction. So he knew that God is in that direction. If he turns his back to that direction, then even though he's an Arab, you see, a Ben Noach is also... Muzhar, how do you say in English? He's enjoined from a belief that's heretical. You know, heresy or avodah zarah or anything of the sort is one of the sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach. So the Marsha would claim that Eliyahu, again, the concept that Eliyahu made a mistake, I don't know how to deal with that. That's something that, you know, Eliyahu has two personalities. You know, sometimes he functions as a malach and sometimes as a human being. But be that as it may, I don't know enough about that. You know, we have to learn Dine Eliyahu, you know. But one thing I do say, according to the Marsha, is that in Eliyahu's mindset, he felt that the guy had violated the first of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach by believing in two gods.
I just, with the way the story goes, and I know it's a very difficult piece, but if he's outside and they're inside, I don't know how many windows there are.
Right.
How would he know which direction?
Well, I guess he saw that, again, you're going to have to assume according to the Marsha, because otherwise the whole Gemara really doesn't get off the ground, that he saw the Jews going in and probably saw them on a regular basis. Look, I'll be honest with you, I'm from Har Nof. So I'm happy that the Arabs stayed out of the shul and didn't go into the shul. That's all I can tell you.
How does the Eliyahu, make a mistake? If you're sent by God to do...
That's what I'm telling you. I think, David, again, I don't know. I'm not a Bucky and Dini Eliyahu. But I think that in certain cases, Eliyahu becomes part of Klal Yisrael. You know, the Chazal say Eliyahu lo mes. So you can interpret it one of two ways. One way is to say that he went up to Shamayim and he came back down again. Another way is to say he went up to Shamayim and he died. And then he was, shall I say, there was a Tchias HaMesim, and now he's not a Malach, but he's one of us. And the Marsha seems to be assuming that he's one of us, and therefore he can make a mistake. But again, that doesn't solve the problem. The problem is, okay, he made a mistake, but why was this Arab Chayiv Misa? And that's what I think Zev was trying to say before. Again, the Rif's Girsa is a different Girsa. I don't know if somebody can open up to the Rif. I partially don't have the Rif in front of me, but the Rif's Girsa is to take out Eliyahu. What?
It was just the Arab.
Say again?
It was just the Arab stam that came into
the Arab. What? The Arab passed by and killed the Jew?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It looks like Rashi has that as well.
Rashi has that?
If the Arab gets killed.
Well, no, I don't know if. Because usually, I'll tell you, Dov, the reason I hesitate, unless you have a proof otherwise, to accept your pshat is because the Girsas HaSfarim that we have, and it's the way that the Vilna Shas was printed, and that's a history that goes back to the printing of the Talmud from the 1500s, is Rashi's Girsa. So it's hard for me to believe that Rashi didn't have Eliyahu HaNavi here.
In my Rashi, when he explains the Sakhar Arabi, he says, Chalafa Hutaya.
Right, it doesn't say
that Arab went by.
Chalafa hu taya socha aravi. Correct. But it, what?
In Arab, we say chalafa hu yam.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Ooh. Oh, we have Chalaf Eliyahu, and Rashi says Chalafa Hu Taya. Ooh, that's a good point. You mean maybe Rashi has the Rif's Girsa?
That's what
Artscroll says. Artscroll says that? Or? Dovyu Machamin to Artscroll. Well, next time they gather together the staff, you know, they're going to ask you to join the staff. You know,
what's the lesson for a Jew that the Arab gets killed for doing this? What do we expect of them?
Again, I don't know what you mean by Musa. I'm just telling you, I'm telling you Allah, I'm not telling you Musa, that a guy who believes in two Rishuyos is Chayiv Misa.
Yeah, but it's not such. I mean, what are the expectations? I mean, fine, Ben Noach should be to hear the Allah, but even still, it's not such like.
I'm not waiting again. Well, Evan, if you could just do me a favor and tell me what's bothering you, because I'm not reading. You know, I feel like I'm on a different planet. I'm not connecting to you. What are you saying?
Is doing something wrong? It's not
right.
Such a big chiddush.
Oh, that's what you're saying. It's not a chiddush. Okay, but again, for us, what do we want to get out of this sugya? As I told you at the outset, we want to understand why is Rav Huna so harsh on this person who turns against the Beis HaKnesses? Is it simply because he's Porish Min HaTzibur? Okay, Porish Min HaTzibur. He's not such a good guy. But I wouldn't think that it's such a terrible violation. So that's why I say that the fact that Eliyahu HaNavi, if you have that gear, so said to this individual, but let's assume he was a Jew, he said to him, or if you want to take he was an Arab like the Marsha, but he said to him, look, do you believe in two Rishuyos? We begin to understand why Chazal are so sensitive to turning your back to the Tzibur. Okay, now I want to learn Rav Kook with you. Does everybody have? I think I gave out on Tuesday a copy of this Rav Kook. So you should have it. And it starts on page 25. Number Nun Vav. The bottom left. And he says the following. Beis HaKnesses hu makom ha-kibbutz ha-tziburi la-avodas Hashem Yisparach. This is the place, the synagogue is designated for the entire tzibur to come together for serving Hashem. V'hine, ha-klal hu, she-ha-odom af she-yeh rashum b'mayla ma'od. Even if a person is on a very high level, he's a unique Jew, you know, he's a giant. Nevertheless, Sorech lishtatef nafshi b'hadisibur. No one can say I'm above the tzibur. No one. I don't care who you are. And therefore he says, as hu nena min atzibur v'atzibur nena mimenu. It could be that if I'm on a lower level, I get more benefits from the tzibur than the tzibur gets from me. If I'm on a higher level, the tzibur gets more benefits than what I get. But everyone, no matter whom, you could be the greatest of the greatest, you are dependent on the tzibur, and you have to be part of the tzibur. Aval, but wait a minute, life is more complicated, says Rav Kook. Im yivar liatzmo derech? What does it mean, I have to be part of the tzibur? What are we, you know, what do they call them, cookie cutters? You know, everybody has to look the same? You know, it doesn't make any sense. A person wants to be Yavar Liatzmo Derech, and Chazal speak about that. A person should break new ground, he should be creative, he should be original. He says, Afilu, and here we're turning to page 26, Afilu Bavodas Hashem. No two individuals have to serve God in a standard way. There's nothing uniform. Yes, the halacha sets up standards, but within those standards, we have to find room for creative and individual expression of service of God. He says, so what happens over here? He says, to some extent, lefarish midarkei tzibur, he would be different than others. You know, maybe the members of the tzibur do it this way, he wants to do it a little different way. Azlo yirotze. But if he is parish min hatzibur, even though we can recognize and praise the fact that he's motivated for the right reasons, meaning that he wants to create his own derech in avodas Hashem, but nevertheless, if he oversteps his bounds and he's poresh min hatzibur, is yelech midechi udechi. That's not acceptable. So how do we find that middle of the road, the balancing act, to allow for a person to be original in his approach to God, but at the same time to be part of the tzibur? He says the following. A person shouldn't daven behind the shul. Even if he's doing it afilu l'shem avodas Hashem, he wants to create his own altar for God. He doesn't want to enter into the Beis HaKnesses and be part of the tzibur. But v'lo amrinan el delo mahadir ape l'beis knishta. He turns his back to the Beis HaKnesses. That demonstrates that in a very final and absolute way, he doesn't want to be part of the tzibur. Yesh b'zeh remez sha'aklal hu nochon im ha'kavona shel oso ha'poreish is lifrosh min ha'tzibur l'chalutim. If he really wants to completely sever the umbilical cord, he doesn't want to be part of the tzibur at all. He has a vision of how he should be serving Hashem, and therefore he wants to completely cut off, disconnect from the tzibur. That's not acceptable. Wow. You can call him the great of the greats, but he's a Russian. If his desire and his intention is always continuously connected to the tzibur, he wants to be partners with the community, and he's a member of the community, and he suffers when they suffer, and he contributes to the community, and he does everything as part of the community. Ela shelefamim, but from time to time, tzarech lalechas, he has an inner push to follow darchei avodah lefi erecho matzava that represent or reflect his own personal individual value system or his style. Leslan ba. We don't care about it. That's what Abai is adding over. He could be outside the synagogue, Rabosa. You hear this? But for one moment in time, you know, within a certain span, he finds himself outside the synagogue, but he's always connected to the tzibur. He is outside the tzibur, facing the same direction of the tzibur. He's making a declaration implicitly, this is what we call body language, that he wants to be part of the tzibur. But at the same time, he wants to break away and create his own unique individual derech. That's acceptable. This is such a beautiful pshat, and it touches on something that's so fundamental. You know, we always have to find that you know, well, what I call the shvil azahav, you know, that golden mean. That on the one hand, we're part of the tzibur, we're always connected to the tzibur, we feel for the tzibur, we contribute to the tzibur, but on the other hand, to allow me, meaning me as anybody, Reuven Shimon Halevi, as an individual, to express my own personal way of serving Hashem. The image, again, this is Drush, but the image of that Rav Kook pictures in front of us is this individual who's outside the Beis HaKnesses, connected to the tzibur, faces the same derech as the tzibur, but yet he's on the outside.
What about the pretty popular today in a lot of communities? We have people setting up their own little shuls, and we're seeing a large community.
David, you're asking the wrong guy, because I'm totally opposed to it. I'll tell you the truth. That's how I was raised. You know, I was raised as a son of a rabbi of a synagogue, a major synagogue. So you're asking the wrong guy.
No,
you know what I mean?
No,
if I was a chassidish rebbe, then I would tell you, Adarabba, create a shtibul. I mean, when my father was a rav in the Young Israel of Avenue K, it was then called Avos Yisrael, a certain chassidish rebbe, I'm not going to mention his name, moved into the community. He had 10 sons.
And each one had their own shtibul?
No. There was only one shtibl. Maybe today each one has. I don't know. I've had a flatbush for a long time. But what he did was, he positioned each one of his 10 sons on a different corner, almost surrounding the whole neighborhood. It was called the East Midwood part of Flatbush. And each one of his 10 sons would stop people on the street and bring them into the shtibl. After years and years, you should know, you couldn't even get into the shtibl, it was so crowded. They offered the best cholent in all of New York. And dues were close to zero. You know, it was a lot more expensive to be part of the shul, because my father used to hack you day and night to give for this cause and that cause. You know, if it wasn't the JNF, then it was Israel Bonds, and if it wasn't Israel Bonds, it was Yeshiva University, and if it wasn't that, it was whatever you name it, you know. So you couldn't be, you know, if you wanted to hide and be a cheapskate, you had to go to a different synagogue, you know. So again, you know, I'm not here to, you know, to tirade against those who create their own breakaway shuls. I would say this. I have seen cases, and I recently visited such a neighborhood, where the neighborhood started bursting at the seams. And it was really getting to the point where, you know, people were very far away from the shul, there were no more apartments, and... But it's interesting, the case that I have in mind, I don't want to mention the case, but the rabbi of the shul actually gave his blessing to create a new synagogue. And it became the second synagogue in a city that had one synagogue for 50 years.
But that's that parish.
Correct.
That's that parish.
Correct.
That's, you know, because you're doing it with...
Right.
With the blessing of...
Okay. Rabosa, we have 5 more minutes. Let's see if we can do at least the next paragraph. Okay. He says, "V'makom acher," and I thought there would be a footnote here. "Ramaznu achore beis hakneses ki a beis hakneses yeshlo beis tachliot." And Rabosi, you may like this second paragraph better than the first. I don't know; it's a matter of taste. There are two goals and objectives of a synagogue. Ha'achas, number one, he legadel ulerameim shem Hashem Yisbarach, is to glorify the name of God publicly. Ube'emes ikar tachlis mitzius hatfila nivrol is that that's really the essence of prayer. You know, people think that prayer is in order to get what I need. That's not what prayer is all about. Prayer is for the purpose of declaring God and having that recognition of God. Kedeshi akiru abrios yad Hashem. Ultimately, we are meant to recognize the hand of God, divine supervision and providence. The yiru milfanim, and they should be afraid of God. The yelchu bedrachim, they follow in His footsteps, in His mandates. Latuv lahem, and that'll be good for them. Fabez, and a second, which I think Rav Kook sees as secondary, a sort of subset, a tributary. Nistayv mizesh ha'tfilu mo'elis lahasig amavukosh. And tfilu is meaningful in order to get what you need. But here Rav Kook is going to present the following thesis. A generates B. B is totally contingent on A. There's no such thing as B without A. Vehine lu lo haisa ba tefila toelis hamusaris. If not for the fact that tefila, first and foremost, has this, shall we call it, religious / ethical purpose. Kiim, if you want to reduce tefila to one and only one purpose, to achieve your goal and get, you know, have your request fulfilled by God, that would be very difficult. To have B without A is not something that the halacha can tolerate. Why not? Because ma tachlis v'tam yesh b'metzius ha'tfilo. What are you saying? Are you saying I'm going to pray and I'm going to change God's mind? Halo Hashem yisparach lo yitachin shini ratzon lefanov. God is perfect. You can't influence Him to change His mind. If God decided that this is, then that's what's going to be. Is love alone tefilasenu? And we've touched on this in the past, that the most difficult theological question about prayer is that how our prayers influence or impact on God. Aval, but really, now we have to understand prayer. Kevan sheyesh b'tefilah tachlis musaris. If we embrace the fact that tefilah fundamentally has a moral purpose, the al yedei hakara, shakol miyado yisparach, we recognize the fact, and we publicize this in the synagogue, in the community, that God is the source of everything that we have. Yutav matzav ha-musari. Now we uplift the level of spirituality and the ethics of the entire community. V'tisrabat stokav ha-meshorim, and all justice and righteousness will be increased. Oh, now there's a great purpose for tefillah. Now we justify the essence of tefillah and its objective. Vehine atachlis hapnimis haikri shal tefila, our inner feeling, and the main goal of atfila should be directed towards the tzad hamusari, to recognize God as the source of everything. Vehimu resez bepnim shal. Since this is the deeper meaning in tefila, you know, on the outside, you know, you ask a person what is prayer for, you know, you ask the average person who's running to the synagogue, why are you running? He says, well, chas v'shalom, I have a sick child or I'm financially challenged. You know, he sees the chitzoni, he sees the externalities, he doesn't see the pnim. The inside of the shul, says Rav Kook, represents the pnim. Vatzada tofel, but the secondary, which means, you know, I want to get what I want to get through tefila, that's called, in the language of our Gemara of Rav Huna, achorei beis hakneses. That's the outside. That's secondary. Therefore, kol ha-mispalel achorei beis hakneses, meaning all that he's interested in is his own mevukash. As far as the tzad musari shel tefila lo yasim lev, he's not interested. He's not going to recognize tefila as something that has a pnim to it, an insight to it, a deeper meaning. Namely, this spiritual declaration of the divine power. But all he wants is chitzon, he wants to be outside the shul. He wants to say, I'm going to impact on God, I'm going to change God's will. Hu nikra rasha, because he's really denying our belief that God is perfect. And he quotes a few psukim in Tanakh for this. Ki atfilo lo tutzmach mimenu hatovel amasim hareu kechiru v'gidu v'kiilu yesh shinui ratzon lamala. Once he cuts off the first and main primary purpose of tefillah, and he's saying that tefillah is justified and is exhausted by the second objective, namely to get what I need, he's as if he's saying something which is theologically antithetical to Judaism, that he has the power as a human being to change and alter the will of God. Al kein rak tfilas yesharim ritzono is a poskim mishlei. Ki bechol tfilasam heim shoavim hatchuna apnimis shal isromus hanefesh. The yesharim are those who draw from the deep and hidden meaning of tefillah, which is to raise the nefesh, to uplift the soul of man. That is the goal, and that is the meaningfulness and the treasure of prayer.
So what he's saying is, in other words, he could actually be inside the Brit Knesset, and the fact is that...
That's true too, yeah. If he doesn't have the right attitude, right?
He's doing it all wrong.
The Gemara is just giving you the symbolism of Achorei. You see, that's the godless of Rav Kook in both pieces. Rav Kook in both pieces is taking Achorei Beis HaKnesses, and we are stuck in the technicalities. So where is he? He's on the west side, he's on the east side. We racked our brains with logistics. Says Rav Kook, leave that all out, because you're missing the point of this Gemara. The Gemara is trying to convey a message. And that's what Agadat is all about. The Achorei Beis HaKnesses is a symbol. It's a vision, it's abstract. It's a symbol of one or two things. Even it's a symbol of a man who wants to break new ground and create his own way and leave the tzibur behind. Or it's a symbol of a person who thinks that tefillah has no pnimius to it. All it is, prayer is chitzonius. It's exactly what I want. You know what? I got an exam tomorrow. You know, I got my CPA exam tomorrow. I'm going into Davin because I need divine help to pass the CPA. And Rabosa, I have to tell you that there are people who really think of prayer in those terms.
At least, I mean, and it's maybe not the proper way, but at least they're praying to God.
Okay. Okay. Well, look, you have to understand. You have to understand that Rav Kook here is he's on a tirade. You know, he's dealing, and we've seen it in many of his presentations, he's dealing with this theological problem of, you know, God works for me, Kavyochol. And that is a very deep, you know, theological mistake. People who express that in prayers who think, you know, I'm going to go in there. And there are all sorts of things going on today which I don't even want to talk to you about. You know, where you buy prayers, you know, and now they sell them on the market. I mean, it's all a reflection of this very childish, superficial understanding of what prayer is all about. Okay, Rabosai, it's time to learn a little Chumash. If anybody wants to, you know, look over the daf that I have for today, you can take one, and that's so we'll start in about 5 minutes, okay? If you can bring in a Chumash, you know, that would make it even more meaningful.
Yipashal.